Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 126 for July 7, 2010, Escosia, PBS. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show where we cover free, libre, open source software that spells floss. I spell Randall Schwartz correctly because that's my name. Randall Schwartz, your host. Each and every week, I try to bring you the top people from the open source community, movers and shakers, maybe some unusual projects. I think today we're covering a really interesting and unusual project. But before I get into that, let's bring on our co-host, you've heard him here before many times now, part of our rotating panel of co-hosts, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome to the show again.
That's right. It's Aaron Newcomb, and I spell that correctly with two A's.
Ah, okay. Not like, Elvis's middle name? It only has one A or something like
right.
that?
Yeah, exactly.
The other way of spelling. So just let me check my notes here to see who we actually have on the show. I believe with Michael Edema, something like that. Sorry, I'll have to pronounce it correctly. With the Escosia project, Escosia PBX. It's a free open source Asterisk-based clone. But before I get to them, I do want to say also that I'm really sorry we missed last week's show. I had a cancellation at the last minute for my guest, and because I'd scrambled pretty heavily to cover the week before's last-minute cancellation, I just didn't want to do that 2 weeks in a row. It's just a little too crazy for me. And it's funny because that led to someone actually putting on the Wikipedia page that Floss Weekly was permanently canceled. And I want to let you know, no, we're not canceled. We're still here. We're still doing shows. So sorry about the 1 week that missed, but that's, things happen. You know, it's the way it works. I think it covers all my first notes. So Aaron, should we get our guest on now?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got my Oregon Trail shirt on here. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, no, for those that are watching the video, behind me is broadcasting from the 43rd floor of the ninth tallest building in L.A., and that's some of the actually taller buildings right behind me there. So if you see those unusual views back there, I brought you courtesy of Oversea.net, my current primary contractor. So let's go ahead and get our guest on the phone here, on Skype, I should say. Hello, Michael. Where are we speaking to you from?
I'm actually in Wolfenbüttel, Germany, the home of Jägermeister, the most famous thing from the city.
Wow. Well, the two most famous things, of course, are Jägermeister and what we're about to talk about today, Escosia, I think I pronounced it right, Escosia PBX. I gave us sort of an intro at the beginning of the show. You want to fill us in and maybe correct what I added already?
Sure. Project started in beginning of 2007, kind of the result of a proof of concept thing. We noticed that nobody really had an easy-to-use PBX distribution that was based on Asterisk. But the main focus was that it was really easy to use and would actually run on an embedded system. So I got to work on it. And basically, after 3 years, now we have an open source telephony system firmware for a download size. And you can install it on a system with as little as 64 megabytes of RAM. Disk space, you need about 30 megabytes. And the processor could be down to about 200, 300 megahertz. That's about all you really need. Usually, Asterisk-based systems are an entire ISO CD worth of stuff, a couple of gigabytes install size. And there are some very easy-to-use distributions out there. They're very, very good products out there and with big companies behind them. But nobody really focused on this tiny appliance-based market. So we thought we'd try and do something in that direction and see if we could come up with something, see if it was actually even wanted, just kind of play around in the market, see if somebody was even interested in a project that did exactly that.
So we've had Mark from Asterisk, actually from Digium, on the show, but I think it was like 3 years ago. Do you want to kind of give a overview of what Asterisk really is and what services it would provide for you first?
Sure. Asterisk is at the core of Escosia PBX. Asterisk is an open source telephony toolkit, and it's just amazing. It's been around for over 10 years now, and you can connect it to ISDN lines, analog lines, basically any type of telephony line in the world. Any type of telephone can speak to it. You can talk to your mobile phone over Bluetooth. You can talk to Google Talk. There's licensable plugins that let you talk directly to Skype without any sort of weird hackery, and with sound card cables and stuff like that. A really official supported thing from Skype that plugs right into Asterisk. It's got a ton of modules. You can do database lookups during calls. You can script call logic. Just the sky's the limit. You can basically do anything you can imagine with that toolkit. And that's exactly the problem with it, is that for the normal user to get started with Asterisk is quite the challenge. You really have to know what you're doing. You have to read up in the book, as they call it in IRC. The book is always required reading, and then you can figure out how to configure all these separate modules. All the different settings for them have to be in harmony before you can make your first phone call. And that's the advantage and disadvantage of the software itself.
So we've got Asterisk, which is a very powerful, very flexible PBX system. Basically, if I have phone connections to make in my small office or home office, and I need to route those and be able to have like extensions that have numbers and be able to have outgoing calls go through certain trunk lines, whatever, I would use Asterisk for that. But what you're saying, if I understand you, is that it's so powerful that it's complex to set up. And what you've done is put a nice GUI front end on it, as well as making it small enough to put on a small, no moving parts device then, right?
Right. If you want to a nice walkthrough of how I don't want to say tedious. I don't mean to insult Asterisk in any way. It's fantastic. But to set up a simple pass-through type situation where you have an incoming call come in one port on your system and you want it to go back out the other port to an existing telephone, you have to touch some files that configure those ports. You have to touch files that tell you how to handle the incoming call and where to direct it, how to handle voicemail if the user does not hang up in a certain amount of time. You have to script the entire dial plan by hand. And there's an episode of old episode of System on Revision 3 where John Todd is going through step by step how to set that up. And that's an interesting piece of video to show you exactly how what a process that is to set up a simple installation of Asterisk. That's in 2005, so things have gotten a bit easier. I don't want people to get on me and say that Asterisk is so hard to use. There are some shortcuts now. But that's basically the problem. You also have the problem that you're dealing with really foreign terminology, like a trunk group. A trunk group, what is that? A trunk group is actually a group of telephone lines that go out to a provider. And if one's busy, you should use the next one. And if the next one's busy, you should use the next one. And this just that terminology alone in all aspects of the project are very telephony oriented, and they're not usually familiar to the normal person, like an extension. An extension is just a phone number, but if you're not familiar with that, you just you're lost when you're reading the documentation immediately.
So not too many people know this, but I actually used to be a telephone technician back in the early days of my career. So I'm familiar with this. And when I was doing telephone work, I mean, we were right at the verge of cutting over from analog to digital. So there's still a lot of, I still have my punch tool downstairs where we'd punch down the wires to a block and then you'd connect those up to the telephone system and all that. And we were just starting to get into IP telephony when I kind of left that industry. But so I understand some of the terminology that you're saying. And I guess things in the system make it easier for people that maybe don't understand this stuff to get a system up and running? I mean, would this be something that I could set up in my basement and then run my house on it? Or is it more powerful than that? Could a small company, let's say, set this up and use it for 100 extensions in their office?
Well, the idea is that anyone can use it, of course. That's a really nice goal from a lot of projects, but it's really hard to reach. So lowest common denominator, we're trying to shoot for anybody who can pick this thing up and treat it like a consumer consumer product. You shouldn't have any technical expectation of somebody buying a Linksys router or something. They should just get it. It should just work. So you can use it in those whole range of scenarios. The really kind of the surprising thing that you find is that you can take advantage of such a system even if you're not a technical person or if you need that kind of functionality in your small business or your home office. Because maybe 10 years ago, you would never imagine that every household would need a wireless router. That was pretty advanced technology, and anybody who had one was probably an early adopter and really into the cutting-edge technology. But now we have so many ways to be reachable. We have normal phone lines, and normal landlines that go into your house. You have things that run over SIP, the SIP protocol, voice over IP protocol. You have Google Talk, you have Skype. All these different ways of being reached. The problem is, if your computer is not on, that ringing telephone, so to say, will never be answered. So you need now basically a way to route those calls, a voice router of sorts. And Asterisk is perfectly capable of doing that, but you have to know what you're doing. So I'm trying to take that and bring it down to a level where you can say, here's my Google ID. And I have an analog phone plugged into this computer here. Here's my normal telephone account or my telephone connection to my to AT&T or whomever you have. I also have a Skype ID. I also have this cheap overseas calling plan with a voice over IP provider. And to be able to bring all those connections down into one box that's local in your house and have a single telephone ring no matter what route they choose to come in. It's just surprising that people can take advantage of something like that, and they didn't know they needed it. But when it's made easy enough, they see the advantage in having a system like that.
So what would I need then from a hardware perspective to get started? We'll talk about some more of the software bits in a minute, because I think there's some more utilities and more open source software packages that you're using to make this happen. But what would I need from a hardware perspective to get started in something like this? Obviously, you're going to need, if you have lines coming into your home or your business, you're going to need a card that's supported, I guess, by Asterisk to be able to get to interface those lines with the system. But how much hardware are we talking about here?
You need what Ascosia is designed for is an appliance type system, and I have one here. It's they're like a little embedded computer. They're very tiny. Here's all the ports in the back. And this runs on a few watts of power, a couple hundred megahertz. You can get boards from a company called PC Engines, and it's called a single board computer, an SBC. So it's not quite an embedded computer. If you're an embedded Linux developer, you'll probably be very angry if I would say that's an embedded computer. It is a full-blown computer. It just doesn't have a VGA output. Or a keyboard input, has a serial interface, that's it. So you need something like that. Then, like you said, you need an interface card. You need something that can actually attach to and talk to the phone line. The cool thing about that is you don't need a different interface card for every different country or every different provider in the world. It's kind of the trend across the board in software and hardware. As hardware gets faster, processing power goes up. The intelligence doesn't need to lie in proprietary hardware. So these interface cards that Ascosia and Asterisk can talk to are very stupid. They have no logic in and of themselves. They're basically able to send signals and receive signals, and they pass all that information on to the software, which then interprets it, and it cuts the information into frames or cuts it into waveforms that can be analyzed, and you can pick up digits, stuff like that. So all the logic is in the software, and the hardware is really kind of taken a backseat to the power in the CPU has to be strong enough, but that's about it. There used to be echo cancellation and everything built onto those interface cards, and now that's really kind of gone to the side unless you're having a huge installation.
Yeah, in fact, it was kind of funny because I'm packing up my house and ran across a couple of Sportster modems and old Haynes modems laying around. And those things, you know, they had all that technology built into those as well. So it's interesting how the technology has changed. And really, become commoditized, if you will. You know, like you said, all those interface ports now are pretty much just standards-based dumb ports that don't have a lot of the software built into them. So it's interesting how the software in general, but in this case, open source software specifically, has enabled people to go out and take these commodity parts and then make a system that, you know, back when I was working on these things, I mean, they would be anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000. And now you can basically cobble a system together for very little. How much does that, like that box that you were showing, how much does that cost? How much would something like that go for?
Sure, that's a four-port analog system. And you can configure the ports as you wish, if they should face internal, external to the system. We have that in our shop for $450. The pieces for it, that's a mini PCI card inside there and a baseboard. You can get those all off the shelf, but they don't have the nice packaging, of course. That's what we're also good at, is making something look nice and putting some support behind it. The interface cards have come down quite a bit in PCI, and the PCI-based models have gone down quite a bit because that market is just so big now. People have realized they can build entire companies around it, and entire industries are all of a sudden popping up around the fact that we have this nice glob of software that can speak to any telephone connection in the world. So people are putting GUIs on it and putting help behind it and throwing up 1-800 numbers left and right and pay for service, whatever, to take advantage of that. It's just such a huge, it's just happened in the last, 5-10 years that's actually the case, that you have access to all of this. You have access to the telephony world now. It's open. Before, it was just a black box, like you said, some mystery product from somebody that was overly expensive and was treated like a baby in the corner, and don't touch it. It just works. Just leave it alone. And now you can open that up and program scripting in PHP and do all these crazy things. And it's really the prices have gone through the floor. It's raced to the bottom as far as hardware goes.
Right. So real quick, before I turn it back over to Randall, tell me about some of the other software, open source software bits that you use. We talked about Asterisk a little bit, but what else do you use inside this system to make it work?
Sure. Open source is the name of the game. There's no way we could have done something like this with as few people involved in that amount of time. There's about 50... software components in a SCSI PBX, and to name them all would be a long list. But the big ones are BusyBox, which is it's the Swiss Army knife of building an embedded Linux system. We actually, I could just back up and kind of tell the story of how the software evolved. We started out as a fork of the Monowall project, which is a really nice FreeBSD based firewall project. Hacked out all the firewall features and started just with this nice shell. This thing was really designed from the ground up to work on an embedded system. Install media, all those things you have to watch out about. It's very compact. So we progressed through that and added all these features, and then actually ported from FreeBSD to Linux, which I can say is a real treat and a lot of fun. So if anybody wants to discuss FreeBSD and Linux differences, I'm open to that. Now we're adding more and more usability things, and that gets away from the low-level drivers, the low-level telephony software, and gets up into jQuery libraries for the interface, the web GUI interface, and PHP libraries, partially alleviating some of the programming overhead that we have to do, and just really getting as far away from the nitty-gritty hardware access and telephony signaling as possible. Once it's done and working, then we try not to touch it ever again.
Okay, so I will take you up on that. Why did you switch from FreeBSD to Linux?
Money.
Money? How's
actually, of course, yeah, it's always interesting in open source. There was a company that saw what we had done in that short of a time. Basically, it was a year of development with myself as the only developer for those 12 months. And we'd turn nothing, we turned a fork of a firewall project into a stable product, something you could actually maybe see in a Best Buy or your insert name of local electronic store here. It was very stable and it worked, and they saw the value in that, and that their customers would see that they can have this open source alternative firmware for their products. So they contracted us to port not only from FreeBSD to Linux, but from x86, and also then include Blackfin, the Blackfin CPU architecture. That took about 16 or 18 months, that whole process. It was a very long process. And that was the other reason. Money, of course, is the catalyst to get you to do something like that. You would never risk your own time and development costs to just jump into such a huge project like that. But in the end, now we have this wonderful build system that we can build firmware images for x86 systems, of course, as small as possible, trim all the fat out of them, do all the patching, automate all the patching, and now we can do that for Blackfin as well as PowerPC platforms, all with the same build tree. We actually, to give credit where credit is due, we forked the T2 Linux project, which is kind of a niche Linux project. It's a distribution that is designed to build other distributions. So not a desktop distribution, but a very interesting one that lets you do this kind of complex build system definition. And it takes the headache out of my daily life. I just say go, and 2 hours later I have very compact images built from scratch with all the cross-compiling tool chains automated in the background, everything built from source to binary.
So I think you got to this a little bit already, but what's the funding source for this? I mean, what's your business model? It sounds like you've got a company that's selling commercial products based on this distribution, and then you're just providing the software inside of that?
Yeah. We were approached by a company from Holland that was open source appliances based on Monowall and PFSense and Asterisk alone, like a bare bones Asterisk system too. And they approached us and said, we'd like to maybe do your logistics and your deliveries and sales and everything for appliances that are built on Ascosia and certify them and make sure that customers know what they're getting. And my forte is not business development or marketing or anything like that. I'm trying to get into that direction. But at that time, somebody wants to make the business model feasible and they're going to do all the heavy lifting. We said sure. And they set up a shop for our site. It's shop.ascosia.com. It's built right into the site. And customers can buy a normal or a certified hardware that we test in our lab here and make sure everything's going to work. We do load limit testing on it, and we add value in that way. So, I mean, this is my full-time job. This isn't a hobby at all. This is how I hope to continue working in the future.
So this is similar to the business model that Digium is using, where they have known good hardware to work with it if a company wants to buy that. You're following that same model then.
Yeah, they're doing I think that's their bread and butter. Is they do a lot of, if they do a lot of consulting, I'm not really sure actually, but I know they do a lot of hardware. They move their hardware. They also recently bought Switchvox, which tailored that system, tailored an Asterisk distribution into a nice, pretty package, of course, and made it really attractive to small, medium enterprise, SOHO. Type installations, made everything very easy to understand and use. So they've also realized that having a telephony toolkit is it's a bit too low on the from the user perspective or for the integrator perspective, that you can't really take that and monetize it directly since it is open source. But they get around all the hardware. I think that's how they survive. I can't speak for their business department. I don't know.
So since this project is open source, you're using things like Asterisk and the other embedded components to this. How much of what you're doing is patches to that kind of core technology, and how much of that are you able to get included upstream then?
we try to push everything upstream just because there's limited man power available to do this, to do all the development, do all the testing. And if you have to constantly, if you upgrade a version of Asterisk and all of a sudden all your patches are invalid, you have to regenerate your patches and recommit them into your own project. It's just nonsense not to push that upstream. It's in the interest of everybody. The only things we don't push upstream are, of course, things that are specific to the project. We have some certain ways we need to handle voicemail, like the way a number is announced. We've had some logic to that that isn't desirable in the larger community of Asterisk. But that's something that we specifically need. Anything we find that is a bug that we can identify as a bug and patch, we'll push upstream. If we can't figure it out ourselves, we'll let them know and somewhat humbly say we'll try and help and do what we can to get it fixed. But that knowledge isn't always there. I'm more of an interface designer now. Usability, I really like doing that kind of stuff, making something really simple to use. And when we're troubleshooting a kernel driver, or recently we're dealing with a GSM card, actually, that won't be recognized. And I just, you know, that's not my... I won't be efficient in it no matter what, and you need to push that research and development up to somebody else who can take care of it much quicker.
So I'm also curious, what's your community like? Is it mostly just the people that are working nearby you, or do you get lots of contributions back from Ecosia users and adopters?
Get a lot of contributions and ideas back from integrators. People who set up the system for another company or have set it up themselves, and they really like having something like that at home. So they come up with ideas, and they come up with proof of concept code for the Asterisk dial plan or the Asterisk configuration files, something that recently came in, which was an excellent little patch. We'd never done anything with fax. The fax has always been kind of the, we don't talk about fax because we don't support fax yet in the project. So when anybody asks about fax, you just say, well, it's coming. And somebody's...
Are people still using fax? Do people do that still?
Exactly. We'd rather just have fax die and just be quiet and go away. But it's not the reality of things. If you tell people that Ecosia is the answer to all of your problems at your small business, and you need to put it in between everything that comes out of the wall and everything that you hold up to your ear, well, except you need still a separate line for your fax because we don't support that. So yeah, we have to address that at some point, otherwise nobody's going to use it. So on the forum, somebody had a proof of, had a working Asterisk configuration logic that would take a fax, record it basically into a temporary file, reinterpret it into a TIFF, convert it into a PostScript document, and then convert it into a PDF and send it by email to somebody. That's great. So, and I knew this, you know, everyone has their black magic, and I think that's how they make a lot of money from Asterisk, because they do these things, they don't document them, and then they sell them to their as consultancy knowledge. So somebody put this up on the forums and said, here, this is how you do that. So
that's not black magic, that's job security.
Yeah, it is. And that's everyone realizes that. So when you see an area that it came up on the forums, I put in the logic to add it into the GUI, and now you just assign an incoming number to this magical virtual fax element, and it will convert it into a PDF and send you an email. So you don't even have to have a fax machine anymore.
And is that part of the software also open source? Could I take that and run a service with it?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool. Well, now I've got my next business opportunity. There we go. Fax number.
You see a lot of opportunistic ideas like that too come in. Well, what would happen if I had, let's say a number that somebody would pay for, and then they receive a certain amount of minutes to use the system? So you mean a calling card? Oh, no. That's not... Yeah, right. Okay. That's what you want to do with it.
So you're doing this full time now. How did you get involved with this, and what were you doing before that?
I was doing more proof of concept stuff, like working on toys that never get used, I guess. and got into working on the UMTS over here. It's like 3G or 4G, maybe somewhere in between. Nobody can decide on a name because you have two standards bodies that don't cooperate with each other. Wonderful. Just doing Java development on cell phones here that would send SIP messaging back and forth and use GPS information. And that was like five years ago. Yeah, 5 years ago before that was really easy to do. So you had to write your own libraries in J2ME and the Java for mobile devices. You had to write your own libraries for it, your own message passing logic. And it's just a nightmare. And now you include two Java specifications, I think, in your application, and it does all that for you. So I'm glad that wasn't out yet. Otherwise, I would not have had a job.
Cool. Do most of the people that use Ecosia, are they integrators? Are they trying to deploy this system somewhere else, or are they software engineers and stuff?
I think they're integrators. It's kind of the curse of designing something that's so easy to use that everyone can use it. You don't have a lot of technical feedback the way you would if you wrote, a graph library or something like that. You'd have a lot of feedback, technical people using it, sending in patches. And since it's designed for everybody, there's not a lot of patches coming back in. But the most of the people who do use it are integrators. And that's who we're targeting with the web shop offerings and the way some of the documentation is written. To get down to that real consumer level where you're buying something in Best Buy off the shelf and it's running pure open source software, that's where we want to go. But that's a really big leap. That's a really hard thing to actually accomplish because you do have to offer support in some way and you have to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we're still shooting for the middleman. The integrator can take that, deliver it to a customer, explain it to them, help them, provide technical support. And, of course, we have packages that support the project financially for the integrators. They can purchase a support package from us, and then they have second-level support, so they're not jumping into the deep end of the pool when they promise their customer that this thing will work for them.
I'm just asking you, does Ecosia auto-recover from asterisk deadlocks?
From asterisk deadlocks? We haven't had any big problems with that because asterisk deadlocks seem to occur in high traffic environments. That's one of the things they're constantly working on, and I think it's a really big problem to troubleshoot. It's such a huge piece of software, but that's besides the fact. We usually operate in really small environments where you have five concurrent calls with 25 users. You do a little bit of routing and some voicemail on those lines coming in and out. And that's about all we're really doing. So deadlocks may occur. I'm not real sure, but we've never had one happen in our stress testing so far. If it would occur, we would not be able to recover from something like that right now. It's a nice idea for.
And I also saw that in the demo video, you were using jQuery drag and drop to do your management. I really like that kind of user interface. Can you talk about how that came about?
That's one of those things where you see how somebody else does that specific interface element. The specific interface element is you have to enable and disable and prioritize codecs. So the way audio is converted inside the project, you have to set up preferences for I'm using this specific provider. Should I use a high-quality codec or a low-quality one? Which ones should I disallow? So you have more than one choice. It's more than on or off. It's on and a priority. So there's other people out there doing that that specific configuration element, and they were using select boxes. So you would drop down the first one and say, my first choice is G711A. And then all the boxes would refresh and then eliminate that choice from them and give you all the other choices. So if you decided to reprioritize something, you'd actually have to change all of those boxes again from top to bottom anytime you changed your mind. And that's just not acceptable. It's just really way too complex. So we were looking at ways to do it and saw the different user interface elements actually originally from Scriptaculous that did this drag and drop and draggable, droppable entities. sortable op entities that are automatically serialized on post. Just fantastic. And just recently ported that over to jQuery. But that was the only answer. That was the quickest way to slide something from right to left and then move it up and down in a list, and you've taken care of that rather complex choice.
It's really cool because the advanced technologies like Scriptaculous and jQuery are letting us build these really rich interfaces and making it possible. I mean, I could just imagine trying to do that with all these slider boxes and type in the number 1, 2, and 3 and little check boxes by each one. And maybe you had an interface that was previously like that, but it just seems like this is so much more natural when you're really trying to target the small office guy trying to figure out how to set things up. That really, I really appreciate that you took the time to make that kind of an interface.
Yeah, it's a lot of effort at first because, I've done different web programming jobs and that was never my thing I wanted to do for the rest of my life. But you see, at least since you've kind of maybe dabbled in that world a bit, you see the tools that are available. If you don't know a library exists that allows you to create such a native application feeling to it, then you'd never use something like that. But the time invested in setting that up once and then creating it as a function, now that's just a library function, make sortable, and that's it. Make sortable and give it an array of choices and tie it into a form, and we're done. So now that one thing has been written once, and that's the last time we'll ever have to do the research on it and debug it. It's all done.
It's really, really nice that you have that sort of opportunity available, especially that you're leveraging all these different open source technologies to be able to get everything done. So you can focus on your piece of the puzzle, which you clearly have done a good job with. I mean, at least I appreciated that demo video, just how simple it was to set up the 3 extensions and the trunk line and the voiceover IP. It was really something that almost anybody could probably get their hands around and get their head around, right?
Yeah, that's the... We should have made that video a long time ago because... It's always when you talk to people about Asterisk and that you're working on a GUI, then you get, why are you working on another GUI? There's already 10,000 of them out there. And then I have to go through the same nice little talk about, well, it's not a GUI. It's actually a firmware that you can put on little tiny devices. And it's actually really easy to use. And it doesn't use the same terminology. And I get sick of explaining that. And then I found, what's it called? Jing, I think. Jing project for the Mac does a really easy video capture. I made that quick video just internally, and then somebody saw it and said, you've just put that online. That explains exactly what you're doing. So I redid the audio a bit, and yeah, that's been the best piece of marketing I've been able to come up with so far.
Yeah, well, I think that it's really important. You mentioned usability, and that's kind of what we've been talking about over the past few minutes, is this idea of usability. And I think that's so important. I mean, we all remember the days of when open source projects were first starting up, and they were basically only for the geeks, and they were really hard to use, and that kind of drove people away. And now in the environment of iPhone and Android, and usability has become king if you want to get people to stay with your particular project for more than a few minutes. I mean, if they can't figure out how to use it within the first 30, 60 seconds, I know I'm like that because I don't have time a lot of times to figure stuff out anymore. So if I can't use something right away, I'll find something else that's easier to use. So I think usability is king. And I'm so glad to see that you're focusing on making it easy to use and really, really easy to understand how to make the system work. I think that's great.
It's really hard to do usability unless that's really your primary focus. To build it in just as an afterthought in a product is impossible because you've already gotten so many options on the plate for the users to touch and mess up that, unfortunately, it's not possible to go back the other way. We all use MacBooks here. Everyone's kind of an Apple fanboy. I can't actually afford an iPhone 4, but yeah, would love to have one anyway. So the usability is always in the back of my mind of this, you pick this up, anybody can use it and it just works. And that always comes at the cost of security partially, and also the flexibility that you have. But we don't want flexibility. We want flexibility for the people that know what they're doing. So we've built in called the integrator panel. It's a really hidden option. If you hit escape anywhere in the GUI, all of a sudden you have a full Ajax access to the the Astra's console, and you can edit text files by themselves and all that stuff. But otherwise, it's out of the way, and you don't want to add another checkbox. We've had that problem that people come to the project, they know what they're doing. In the Asterisk world, they're really competent, really good people. And I'm not an Asterisk expert. I get things done at once, and I automate it, and then I forget it. And that's kind of how that goes. So sometimes I get asked a question about Asterisk, and I don't know the answer. But these people come to the project, and they program PHP, and they set up a nice page that allow you to do call waiting queues, and to do time-based call routing and all this stuff. But all they've ended up doing is copying the structure of the configuration file one-to-one and providing a text box for every single option in that text file. And that's not doing anybody a favor. It's slow going, but then making sure it's only done once, and that hopefully you never have to explain how that thing works to anybody.
Right. Well, that's a big help. Now, one more question I've got to ask you too. I may have missed this before, but I mean, who is that you know of? Who's using this? What are there any companies? And not that you can share names, but I mean, if you've got integrators, you know, deploying this for companies and things, who's using it? What kind of companies are using this system? Using this particular system to run their business.
There's one I would love to be able to say, and I can't say it. So that's always lovely. That's the big one, of course. They don't want to be named.
But you can always say what kind of company they are. Is it like a retail company or a large internet company? I mean, you can generalize for it.
It's a major telecom, and they have been using it to route calls in and out of a application center. It was an ISDN and SIP gateway. ISDN to SIP or ISDN to voice over IP gateway costs thousands to get a decent one. And they bought one of our cheaper appliances. It's 450 euros. It's like $625, I think. And they're routing calls in and out of that data center. Just a simple implementation of the project. But yeah, that's another way to... in other situations, we're actually... I don't have any big names to throw around there, but we're in some pretty cool, interesting areas to me. In Africa, it's been set up in some basic call centers for people to route calls to a group of workers, or to be able to connect really cheap phone hardware to a really expensive phone line. So you don't have to buy the telecom recommended, I don't know, $300 phone per connection to that line. You can break it out into normal cheap phones that cost $9 or something, just regular Radio Shack phones. It's been used in that way. It's been used as an ISP. They actually rebranded it. We do rebranding services if you want to just stick this on your own hardware and OEM it. So we'll white label the whole solution, make it look like it came from them. And they provide that to their customers. They can... there's little flags in the project where they can say the settings for the SIP or for settings for the voice over IP provider are burnt in and you can't change them. The settings for whatever this certain limit on number of phones you can attach to it, then they can burn that in, and that's their option. That's not something I'd want in the open source version of it, of course, but that's something that they can choose to add if that's in the interest of their product. Yeah. That's kind of where we've been so far. We working together. I have a couple more here. This one, if you can tell, we're working on this right now. It's got a help me serial cable sticking out the side because it's still being debugged. But this is another appliance that's coming up. It can do GSM. It can do ISDN, internal, external, analog, internal, external. It's based on PowerPC. From a company in Canada called Pika. There's another one for that other company here that's based on Blackfin. And those are real commercial products that are running an open source firmware, which is really exciting that it's actually that far. That I don't think has been done in such a way that it's actually promoted as open source firmware. The firmware for the Linksys devices was open source firmware, and then they got sued because they didn't tell everyone that it was open source firmware and didn't tell anybody how to make the firmware again once they distributed it and they got in a bunch of trouble. So we're going about that in a different way, and these companies are also going about it in a different way.
Now, the development repo, is that publicly facing? Can I get to all of the, however you're doing your development?
Sure. It's Subversion-based, and it's actually a hosted thing, so it's external to the site. Try and host as many things external and cut down on having to debug server installations and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, if you go to ascosia.com, in the lower right navigation, there's something called the developer portal, and there's a, that's a track installation that shows you how to pull down the code, run it on a, either build your own host based on T2. It's only compilable on T2 systems officially. It might work on other systems. Patches welcome, but we try and keep everything standardized. So the host environment is standardized, and then it compiles this buffer tool chain even from the host, so you know you always have the same bits being compiled on every system. But yeah, the firmware is, source code is there for all the aspects of the project. You can build all the firmwares for all the different commercial offerings with that software set too.
So you also even open up your bug tracking system as well, so I can see kind of the issues you're working on and the priorities you're giving them?
Yeah. Yeah, right now there's a few things open, but they're all probably considered feature requests. There's a couple of nasty bugs, which led to one feature just being ripped out because it was not stable enough to be proud of, so we just ripped it back out. And that's going to come in 2.1. All the fax stuff is going to be included in 2.1, as well as some caller ID manipulation stuff that's coming up. Some more flexibility so people know who's calling them from where. And you can add little tags onto the caller ID so you know how to answer the phone, which hat you're supposed to wear when you answer the phone. So important stuff.
Great.
I don't realize, but very important stuff in the real world.
And speaking of important stuff, got to ask this, Emacs or VI?
VI.
One for the other column. Okay, well, that's okay.
Oh, but I know you'd be excited. The most recent commit to the project is actually another guy that started working here recently, Mark Stefan. He committed an entire test suite written in Perl. So I had some trouble getting through it because I'm not a Perl guy. The most of the project is written in PHP and Bash. So it will go in and automate stress testing of the entire system and produce nice little graphs that show you how many calls you can run on a system concurrently, how many conferences it'll support, and where the entire normalize all that stuff. So that's all written in Perl. That's our big Perl chunk for the entire project.
If you need some help with Perl, I can recommend a couple of good books.
I'm sure you could. Yeah. I'm unfortunately, this guy does not need the books. And he's asked me a couple questions, and then I have to, unfortunately, even as his boss, kind of look stupid and say, I've never written any Perl in my life. I have no idea.
It's okay. We all learn at some point, I guess.
Nobody's perfect, I know.
Yeah. Well, if people want to find out more about this, I think you already gave the URL. It was ascosia.com, right? Yep. And any other places people should go to find out about this?
Ascosia.com. There's a couple other interviews out there about the project at different points. I think there's one interview where I'm completely destroyed and frustrated during the port from interview. There's some general information about voice over IP. If you want to just get into that and talk to other people who are hobbyists all the way up to professionals, there's something called the Voice over IP Users Conference. If you just type in VUC.me, that is the Voice over IP Users Conference every week. And some interesting stuff there, really from all ranges, from voice over IP in the cloud. There's such a huge... it's like you used to be able to study computer science and then you were a computer scientist. And you used to say, I'm a VoIP expert, but now you can't say that anymore. You can say, I'm a expert in automating this certain thing or in database integration or whatever. So, yeah.
Thank you for taking your time today to come out and talk to us about Ascosia. I definitely, I saw in the chat room quite a few people were going, oh my God, this is exactly what I needed. So obviously you've made yourself a few new customers.
Perfect. Yeah. If there's any questions too, feel free to shoot a question up on the forums. Personal emails don't work very well because I get a little bit too much traffic there. But forums, I'm always pretty keen to answer anything there. It's forums.escozia.com. And thanks for having me. It's pretty interesting to see how many other open source VoiceOver IP projects are out there. And it's really hard to differentiate yourself. So thanks for the chance to talk about it a bit.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michael. That was Michael Edema. What was it, Michael?
Edema.
Edema. There we go. Sorry again. Michael Edema with the Escozia Project. Want to thank you for coming on today. Thanks.
Thank you.
So, Aaron, interesting, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun to kind of go back to my roots a little bit and talk about telephony for a while. You know, like I said, it was all analog. It's just really interesting to hear how all of this stuff is being done, you know, in the software now, and the hardware has really become commoditized.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and the whole idea that we're moving away from all these hardware things down into, you know, just software, where it's just, you know, as soon as you get the signals out of something that's, you know, like we can hear and speak with, you can do all these wonderful computations with them and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think it's also great that he's using, you know, that he's really built a foundation upon all these other open source projects, using open source code that's out there and available, and piecing it together in a way that's easy for people to use. It's so important. Not that people like you and me can't figure it out, but I mean, if you really want to get people to use it, it has to be easy for them to pick up and use. And so I think the fact that he's concentrating on usability is another really important thing. And I think it's great that he's really focusing in on that.
And I think also, I think you just got to it there for a second, but that because all these pieces like Asterisk and Linux and PHP and that are all open source, he was able to integrate those in a way probably that none of the original creators necessarily intended or knew about. And I think this is starting to prove that really, you know, open source really is the way to go as far as being able to go much further with your creation. I mean, it's like I can't imagine, you know, Guido as he was creating PHP saying, oh, yeah, someday I hope it gets used on a PBX. I'm going to put the right hooks in there for that.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
So very cool. Very cool. Speaking of very cool, I want to talk about our upcoming guests. We have a number of really exciting guests coming up soon. Next week, I have Guillermo Amaral, who is talking to us about KDE and FLOSS in Mexico. And right after that, Thomas Cherryholm is going to talk to us about the Linux MCE, which is a home automation system, not a home automation, a home home automation basically is what that falls under. We've got Mark Phillips and Andy Gross talking about React, which is one of those NoSQL databases. We've covered a bunch of those on this program in the previous, because I'm really fascinated with them, actually. We've got, and just added to the schedule last week or 2 weeks ago, we have Andy Hall and Akeem Hassanmuir going to talk to us about VirtualBox. I think you know a little bit about VirtualBox, Aaron, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm a big user, and I actually converse with Andy and some of the other guys on a daily basis, just being at Oracle myself in my day job. You know, I'm on their mailing list and things, and so I always see when the betas come out, and I get a chance to test that stuff out. And I called them up, and I said, hey, you guys need to get on FLOSS, and they were very responsive, so I'm glad to get them on the schedule.
And I think we can already pre-announce that you'll be the co-host for that show as well, so you can help me fill in on places I don't know things about VirtualBox. Great. Cool. And also, after that, we've got Stephen Heminger talking about Viata, which is a Cisco clone, allows you to make high-performance routers from commodity hardware. We've got Dan Scott and Mike Rylander, system being used in thousands of libraries all over the U.S., so that'll be really fun as well. Hopefully, I'm going to get back to a special co-host for that show, but we'll see. I'm not going to announce it until it all gets confirmed. Lots and lots of people coming up. twit.tv/floss. The upcoming spreadsheet is linked from there. If you have somebody you want on the show, you can do like Aaron just did with the VirtualBox guys and just have them contact me, and we all get set up on the schedule that way. I'll be follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N. Make sure you get the Y in there, otherwise you get the Disney guy, and that's not me. And also, I'll be at OSCON in a couple of weeks, the open source convention put on by O'Reilly, my publisher, my primary publisher. And I'll be teaching Smalltalk, of all things. I have a whole four-hour seminar on the first day or the second day. And here also the Linux Fund, the other hat that I wear, is throwing a nice party again. So fun and recruiting. So we figured we'd probably help people get jobs in the open source community that way. So Aaron, where can people find out more about you?
So you can find out more about me on Twitter. I'm Aaron Newcomb, A-A-R-O-N-N-E-W-C-O-M-B. And you can also go to my website, thesourceshow.org. Although I have to go, if you're looking for a good house in Cincinnati, I've got one for you. But I haven't been doing a whole lot there. I hope to get back to it and do some more episodes of the podcast as soon as we get this move out of the way.
Well, on that note, I think it's a good time to wrap up. So as I say to you all every time, all you guys at home and wherever you may be while you're listening to this, we'll see you next time again on Floss Weekly.